Hi, folks. It is Wednesday night. You are listening to WVEWLP 107.7 FM Brattleboro Community Radio. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken.
And I'm Becca.
Let's get right to it.
All right.
Right back to the most important story that has ever graced our airwaves, kind of.
Not Miss California.
Well, it's an offshoot of the Miss California story. Very good. So let's talk a little bit.
I recognize that sparkle in your eyes.
When we talk about anyone associated with the Miss California story. And that person tonight is not Miss California, but it is my buddy, your buddy, our gay representative, Perez Hilton. So, if folks
Though,
did not
he
hear...
he says he is not.
He says, I am not a representative, which we're going to get to that. So to just to catch everybody up... Perez Hilton was in Canada. He got into it with Will.i.am of the Black Eyed Peas, and then apparently, allegedly, Will.i.am's manager punched Perez Hilton in the face. Now, in the course of this altercation, before he got punched...
You're taking us to a whole new level this week, aren't you?
I know, I'm really focused on the important news. We're going to be doing a ton of important news with Dr. Nathaniel Frank, who's going to be calling in later, so I feel like we can cover these stories right now.
Okay.
Get him out of the way, and then we'll be all set and emotionally ready.
We have had requests on Facebook for more entertainment news, so go for it.
All right, we're going for the entertainment news. So, at one point, Perez Hilton was getting into it with Will.i.am, and you have to watch these videos. Will.i.am put out a statement about it, a video, and then how I sat there and watched 11 minutes of Perez Hilton crying in his bedroom or a hotel bedroom, just talking about how affronted he is, and he's suing for emotional distress in excess of $25,000, which I feel like I should sue for because I watched 11 minutes of this complaining. But so in the course of getting into a fight with Will.i.am, Perez Hilton felt threatened, so he tried to come up with something what would make Will.i.am more angry than anything else, and so Perez Hilton decided to call Will.i.am a faggot. So this happened in the course of their altercation, and he says it in his video. Perez Hilton takes responsibility. I called him a faggot. I said, you're such a fag, and he just kept going and going and going. So now, a lot of the various groups, LGBT groups, are calling on Perez Hilton to apologize for using that gay slur. Perez Hilton not backing down. So just to read a little bit from one of the articles, the openly gay gossip blogger said in a statement Tuesday that he would continue to say things upsetting to gay and straight people alike. He said, quote, I wish none of it had happened. I can't take it back. I did what I thought was best at the moment to stand up for myself in a non-violent yet still assertive way. Clearly, I am not homophobic. Also, I am not, nor have ever claimed to be, a spokesperson for the gay community. Okay, first of all, that's bull. Because when this whole Miss California thing happened, Perez Hilton was really out there and putting himself on the front page of all the different news stories saying, I can't believe she said this. This
right,
community deserves better.
And he also presented that issue to that competition.
Exactly.
So...
exactly. So we're calling BS on that whole statement. So take responsibility for your comment. But one of the interesting things to come out of this, and I do think that there is an interesting piece to all this, not so much Perez Hilton suing because I could give a crap, but it's whether or not people should use the word faggot. So there's a lot of different polls on this. So one of the polls this week, Rebecca, the question is it okay to use the word faggot if you are gay? Here are your four choices. Don't you're already shaking your head. You haven't heard the
choices
yet.
I'm not telling anyone which direction I'm shaking my head.
Choice one, no, nobody should ever use it. Choice two, yes, but only in a joking manner and not as an insult. Choice three, yes, we have the right to use that word any way we wish. This is the gay community. Or choice four, you are not sure. What is your answer?
I just think it's in poor taste. I just say no.
I say no, too. I say no, too. And the majority of folks, 53%, said no, nobody should ever use it. 25% said yes, but only in a joking manner and not as an insult. 16%, which is a chunk. That's a chunk of people, said yes, we have the right to use that word any way we wish. And 5% were not sure. And I thought this was a really great comment from GLAAD. From their media program senior director, Rashad Robinson, quote, for someone in our own community to use it to attack another person by saying that he is the worst possible thing That saying, calling him faggot is the worst possible thing that the thug would ever want to hear, is incredibly dangerous. It legitimizes use of a slur that is often linked to violence against our community. And that's the whole thing. Perez Hilton went out of his way to say, oh, clearly I'm not violent and I wasn't trying to be violent at all. But it really is one of the most violent words that anyone could ever come up with. So
I don't know. I just feel like we use these words that have such power sometimes lightly, and it's just unnecessary. Like, it's we have other words if you want to call somebody something insulting, but really, what's the point?
Right.
I mean, you're not going to get anywhere with that. So.
Exactly. All right, so we are going to start off, play some music from tonight's guest, and then let's go from there, all right?
Works for me.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
That was George Michael singing Amazing.
And it was amazing.
I just want everybody to know...
Oh no, I'm going to be busted on the air.
...that my co-host is not being as nice to me as she perhaps could be. But let's move on to some happier news.
As a side note to everyone, that means there will be video.
There will. I perhaps got caught dancing to the George Michael song. It was fine. Dance lessons are available at thisshowissogay.com. I also do private events, just so you know. Barney Frank, today, all the good gay news happens on our show day. Barney Frank introduced trans-inclusive ENDA. So today, to ban workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, the quote is from Barney Frank, "I am encouraged that we're going to be able to do this year, what we were not able to do a couple years ago, and that is pass a fully inclusive bill. The House approved an employment non-discrimination bill in 2007, but it did not protect for transgender Americans. The 2009 Employment Non-Discrimination Act has 114 co-sponsors, which is up from 62 co-sponsors from 2007. So very big deal that it's trans-inclusive.
Well, why does that matter?
Why does which piece matter?
The transgender language being... included. Why?
You know, we've reported just so many times. I think the best part about this is that I'm sick of reporting stories where we leave off the trans community in order to get a bill passed. So and
that's basically what was happening with ENDA. Was people sacrifice this one part of the community because they thought, well, it's just not socially acceptable enough. Or at least that's the perception, yeah. Was that it was just going to be too hard to pass.
And there have been a lot of members of the LGBT community that have been extraordinarily critical of Barney Frank. He took on a transgender staff person, and people felt that was tokenism and that he really wasn't in it to help out the transgender community. But today, on this day that we have our show, we applaud Barney Frank. We hope this sails through with that many co-sponsors. Certainly would hope so. A little bit more good news. North Carolina. Good news from North Carolina. The North Carolina House narrowly passed legislation this past Monday that would create protections for students bullied for their perceived or actual sexual orientation or gender identity. Having it passed the Senate, it now goes to the Democratic governor, who is expected to sign it into law. It was contentious. It passed 59-57. That's a little
Ooh.
Close. Who cares? We don't care. We don't care if it was close because it passed and now it goes to the governor. So hopefully that's a good thing. 7 Democrats voted against the bill while 1 Republican voted for it. And the quote from one of the Republican representatives, Dale Falwell, said, quote, "The people of North Carolina are being bullied on this floor tonight," which is just silly. They passed it. It helps children not be bullied. Let's keep in mind that we're passing a bill that helps children not be bullied. And I feel that as long as we stick to that, everyone will vote for it. The Democratic governor will sign it.
Who votes against that? They're like, no, you know what? Really, bullying should be okay.
Well,
it toughens them up.
Yeah, it legitimizes gay people as a protected class. That's,
it gives them special...
Gives them special
privileges,
which is
completely
bull. So
we've heard that argument before, I think.
Many, many times before. All right, let's play another song, and then we're going to welcome our guest.
What are we playing?
We are going to play Last Goodbye by Jeff Buckley. It's our first Jeff Buckley song.
It is.
Here we go.
It's over. answers to this, and then I'll go. You gave me more to live for, more than you'll ever know. Maybe it's just because I didn't know you at all. Kiss me, please kiss me. Kiss me out of desire, baby, no consolation.
I'm thinking it's time to get to a guest. How do you feel about that?
Excellent.
Guest, are you there?
I'm here.
Fantastic. Dr. Nathaniel Frank is the author of Unfriendly Fire, How the Gay Ban Undermines the Military and Weakens America. He is the senior research fellow at the Palm Center at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and an adjunct professor of history at my alma mater, NYU, New York University. Go Violets. Historian with a doctorate from Brown University, he is perhaps the most widely published journalist on the military's current policy on gay troops, having twice broke the story of army purges of gay Arabic translators. His publications on gays in the military and other topics have appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, all over the place. He's been interviewed on, heck, if I listed all the outlets, we'd never have time to chat with him. So, Dr. Nathaniel Frank, welcome to the show, Is So Gay.
It's great to be here.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
All right. We have a lot to talk about. Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay. That's good. That's good. So, a few weeks ago, one of the national polls that was out there was, what would you like to see happen first? And the four choices were the repealing of the Defense of Marriage Act, the removal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the passing of the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act, and same-sex marriage legalized within my state. And perhaps unsurprisingly, the repealing of the Defense of Marriage Act was number one, 44% had the plurality, and in a very close second, between second and third, it was the removal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And as we were talking about this a few weeks back, and it suddenly struck me as I was reviewing for tonight, that Don't Ask, Don't Tell has this place in gay culture where it's always on the radar, but never really priority one. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so, and there's a few reasons for that. I think the main one is that more people generally want to get married than want to serve in the military.
Well, there's that.
But historically, a lot of queer people have been on the progressive side of things and sometimes on the pacifist or anti-militarist side of things. And there's a sense that they don't want to be necessarily fighting for something that they otherwise don't really support, which is the military or military intervention, or particularly the use of military force in the particular wars that we're engaged in now.
Well, it's been a really active time for Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as a lot of folks know, and it seems like the news stories change by the hour. In doing some research for tonight, I was looking back at some of the articles and the commentaries in the past 4 or 5 months, and I was struck by one article that said, Obama to end military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. And it was before President Obama was inaugurated. And at the end of the article, it said, quote, "The gay community is eager for a quick repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but fears it could be months before the new administration reaches consensus with lawmakers and the military. Many think Obama could do it quickly, but is leery of the kind of fallout Bill Clinton faced when he tackled the divisive issue." Sure. So even a few months back when we were talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it felt like there was this sense, okay, let's take this slowly. But 3 or 4 months later, is that sense still there? It seems the urgency, a sense of urgency is much more present than it was when we were first talking about this before President Obama was inaugurated.
Right, and I think there's a few reasons for that. The first 100 days, particularly of this administration, so many of us felt a lot of patience and sympathy for what was facing the new administration given the economic crisis and the international crisis. But of course, Don't Ask, Don't Tell is part of national security. And when word came out that a new string of service members were being discharged under the Obama administration, and this was right around or right after, if I remember correctly, the first 100 days were over, and that's a point just traditionally when people sort of stop and assess what the administration has done, what they have prioritized. And I think the fact that we were hearing about, you know, Lieutenant Dan Choi and Victor Fehrenbach and people with critical skills and lots of experience who wanted to serve their country, who were being discharged because of their sexuality, and it was at a time that had passed the first 100 days, suddenly people began to feel like Obama owned this policy. And then I think there was also the fact that Obama has shown that he has the willingness to be bold on a lot of issues, from stem cell research to his speech in Cairo to addressing the abortion issue at his Notre Dame speech. And yet he's been strangely silent on the biggest civil rights issue of our time, I think a lot of us would feel. And that silence is getting louder and louder.
Yeah, no,
right.
Absolutely.
Do you think that the military right now is any more ready for a change in policy?
Than when?
Than a year ago.
Well, perhaps. It's hard to assess a short time frame like that, but compared to the last time this came up in earnest under Clinton, there's no question that the climate has changed enormously, and we know that from polls. We know that from field research that I and many, many others have done. You can ask your Aunt Sally, who's probably talked to gay people who are serving the military or have served in the military, what the climate is like, and it's very, very different. And you also see that in terms of the National Security Advisor, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mullen, and Secretary of Defense Gates, have said some things which at first were kind of mixed messages, but the White House, I think, has begun talking to them, and they have made it clear that they understand Obama's intentions, and I don't think that they're expressing an interest in fighting them in the same way that we've seen in the past.
Yeah. There were two very different stories in the news this week about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. One of them, the more recent of which happened on Monday, was the fact that dozens of lawmakers, 77 lawmakers, 76, 77 members of Congress, urged President Obama to direct the armed services not to initiate any investigations into the sexual orientation of service members and to disregard third-party accusations, and that this would be a strategy that would allow, and this was the quote from the letter, "this bilateral strategy would allow our openly gay and lesbian service members to continue serving our country and demonstrate our nation's lasting commitment to justice and equality for all." Is this the direction to go? Is this the road by which we repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Well, the Palm Center where I work put out a study last month that I co-authored, mm-hmm. that was also written by a team of legal experts on this issue, showing that Obama can use executive authority to halt all discharges. And that would be perfectly legal. The authority comes from a congressional statute, so it wouldn't be bucking the will of Congress. It was designed for this purpose. not of gays specifically, but of giving the president in certain circumstances the authority to govern military separations and to suspend them if he determines that it's in the interest of national security. So I absolutely think that that is consistent with what Obama has said he intends to do, which is to stop the firings. It would stop the bleeding. Now, some people are concerned that this would be temporary or that it would somehow undercut the passion for getting a permanent legislative repeal, which is what's necessary to end this once and for all.
Right.
But so to clarify, that would mostly it would leave the rule on the books, but they would stop prosecuting anyone for it, basically. They would stop going after people for it.
Right, but it would be a 1-2 punch, so that Obama could do that, and he could halt the discharges, which is badly needed. And then a few months down the road, when temperatures cooled on the issue because people had seen the official presence of open gays in the military, he could go to Congress and say, look, the sky hasn't fallen, now let's move to get this off the books. And in fact, because of the prospect of the withdrawal from Iraq, we may not be in that situation for too many more years. So it would have an urgency, which is to say that the executive authority will run out at some point, and for that reason, you know, you have all these gays who are now serving openly or able to serve openly. Mm-hmm. You can't exactly put the toothpaste back in the tube. You can't ask people to forget that the people they now know are gay and put them, stuff them back into the closet. So Congress would really need to act, or else they would risk losing hundreds and maybe thousands of gay people.
And you've talked to a ton of LGBT people who have been discharged from the military. Certainly, you couldn't just put out there, this is how I would characterize all of them, but is there a split between those who are embittered towards the military and those who would go back? Does it heavily lean in one direction if they were able to re-enlist?
And how many of them chose to come out and how many of them were outed?
Yeah.
Well, they're two very separate questions. I mean, there's a wide range of reasons why, both why people are discharged and what they want to do afterwards. There are certainly many, many people like Dan Choi, who's been all over the news, who want to serve, want to continue serving, and say that they will. And Alex Nicholson, who was in the new film Ask Not, that aired on PBS earlier this week, who have made it clear that they love the Army and want to serve. And that is very, very common. There's other people who maybe, you know, they've moved on to something else in life. Maybe they have anger or resentment about it. It would be too much of an adjustment. So there's a wide range to answer that question. In terms of why people come out, you know, the policy was supposed to protect people's privacy, and technically claims that it only punishes people for homosexual conduct. But of course, they define conduct to include statements, and they interpret, you know, statements of "I am gay," and they interpret statements to include any disclosure or revelation that you're gay, even if you didn't make it yourself.
Right.
So emails that have been tapped, letters that have been lying around, you know, third-party accusations if they're deemed credible by a commander. And so plenty of people are outed because they didn't volunteer a statement, although the majority of discharges do come from so-called statement cases. Then again, you have to ask, why do people make these statements? You know, the hostile climate that the policy provides is one of the biggest reasons why people will come out and say, I can't work under these conditions or I can't be my best self. So I'm coming out, and if the law changes, I'll go back in.
Now, I should say there were three stories this week, not just two. One of them, which was just a day or so ago, was the city of San Diego coming out and passing a resolution to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So that was a great story. But the other one that caught a lot of eyes was pertaining to the Human Rights Campaign and a letter that was published on Queerty, which is a site that a lot of us check out on a daily basis. With two major complaints about HRC. One, that it is advising the White House and legislators that they need more support in repealing the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, which has the effect of stemming the ability to gain more support. And two, which is a pretty bold claim too as well, that the funds that HRC collects to battle against Don't Ask, Don't Tell are not actually being used to do so. In your work, do you, in researching this and collecting all the different information that you collect and putting it out there in a way that actually inspires change, do you feel, how important is it to you to work with the various LGBT groups who have a separate agenda that is a lot more than Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I'm not sure if you saw this story, but how you responded to the story and how important it is to you to work with some of these groups.
Well, as a historian, I have not focused so much on the GLBT movement as mm-hmm. I have on the culture and politics of this issue. That said, I certainly try to communicate and be in touch with different groups. It's part of what I have to do on a regular basis. And I have heard those reports that HRC in particular has other priorities. You know, it is division of labor, and different groups have a different turf, and theirs is legislative.
Right.
And largely Washington, D.C., which means that Don't Ask, Don't Tell certainly does fall under their auspices in a way that marriage issues in some cases don't, although they've certainly been supportive and funded a lot of the state-based marriage battles. I don't know exactly why HRC might be doing what they're reported to have been doing. I think that one possible answer is that they have priorities legislatively that they've been working on for a very long time, and they need a win. And if something else looks like it might undercut that, they're going to focus on pushing away any distractions or what you know we might call distractions from their priorities. I don't begrudge people prioritizing what they have decided is important to them or that they're working on, but certainly if they're arguing against the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and allegedly they are representatives of the gay community and gay population, and they have a $30 or actually $40 million budget, if you include some of their wings.
Yeah.
Then that's not something that you know is easy to support.
Well, it's true. I mean, everyone sets priorities, but so if President Obama woke up tomorrow and decided to present that to Congress to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, what would you do? What are you going to think first? How would you react?
And I guess I'd have to get a different job.
And how much free time would that give you all of a sudden?
Well, of course, you know, as we've been discussing, there
and would it be all of a sudden, or would there still be a lot of work to do?
Well, that part of the question there is the question of whether he would look into the executive option that we have said is something he could consider. And
well, we're just skipping that. We're saying Don't Ask, Don't Tell gets completely repealed.
We're in a whole different world.
Well, we're working on optimism here.
So first of all, if he were to wake up and say, I'm going to be working with Congress, you know, to announce this, to finally break the silence and talk about this, then I think the battle will begin. I think that it's not going to be nearly as vociferous as it was in 1993,
right,
when it was a different world. We weren't at war. The religious right had not shamed itself into, well, I don't want to say oblivion, because that would be premature, and they seem to keep coming back, but they're certainly not as powerful as they were then. And in my book, In Unfriendly Fire, I pretty much suggest that they're the single most important reason for why Clinton failed to lift the ban.
Right.
Now, they're still around, and that fight will occur, and it will also occur in Congress, because some of the moderate Democrats and Republicans, some Republicans, don't necessarily want to stick up for equality in this case. And some staffers, I mean, it's clear in the White House that they have made a decision from early on, partly because there are so many veterans of the Clinton White House who were emotionally scarred by Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and okay, I sympathize, but they, I believe, are really letting those emotional scars overwhelm what is, you know, what would be rational, which is to move forward with this now and not let it fester like Clinton did. So
right.
I think there will be a battle, and I think that I hope that I will be, you know, involved in continuing to write about this and speak about it and to inform that debate. And I think that even after the ban is lifted, there will be important issues that we at the Palm Center can contribute to, because of our study of, you know, how these transitions have occurred in foreign militaries.
But do you have
still
a
still work to do? But I there's other things that I want to do, and I am also writing about the same-sex marriage battles now.
Do you have a victory party planned in your head yet, though?
If you finally came to the end of this fight, and this whole process going through Congress actually breezed through, and there were no complications, really, which would be shocking, and we know that this is not
reality.
We want to
hear about your victory party.
Yeah. We're just pondering. Like, how would you celebrate?
I was about to say no, but then I remembered. And, of course, the Palm Center itself does not take a position on policy.
Right.
Of course not. And WVEW doesn't either.
Good.
Of course. I, however, have the luxury of academic freedom, and in the subtitle of my book, How the Gay Ban Undermines the Military and Weakens America, I have made it pretty clear.
Pretty clear.
So I think rather than calling it a victory party at the Palm Center, if we were to, go on a retreat somewhere to regroup and consider what the organization will study next, hopefully we could do that in a warm spot. On a beach somewhere.
There you go. That's what we wanted to hear.
You know, I think it would be...
We have to allow ourselves these fantasies of success.
It's very healthy, and I think that would be, if I do say so, a hard-earned vacation.
Oh, my
Absolutely.
Gosh. I think about it constantly. I mean, my area...
We don't work nearly as hard as you do.
No, not even close. I mean,
I do get to work from my bedroom.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
That's a bad
thing. No, my area of research is, how teenagers use the phrase, that's okay. And if the government came out tomorrow and said, this phrase is banned from all schools, God, I have a victory party plan like there's no tomorrow.
And
so,
where would it be?
Mine would be, I think it would be in Puerto Rico. It was one of my favorite vacation destinations, a big old bunch of friends. I think it would be a good time. Although just visited San Francisco for the first time, and I think that would be an apt place to celebrate as well. But
that's one of my favorite cities. But
you could do both.
The Caribbean.
Oh, it was great.
In general, and to go somewhere where there really are no temptations to do something cultural.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Active, where you can just really lie around the resort for 5 or 6 days, or maybe even a week, with some books and magazines. That would be, I think, ideal.
It would be pretty good. And just think to yourself, oh, I want... All right, we're going to let you off pretty easy with what we normally put our guests through, because we know that you're working a lot harder than we are.
Oh, that's so kind. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, to do a radio show again and again and again.
Yeah.
You have to worry about guests not calling in.
Oh, I'm sure we have no idea what you're talking about in that one. But, okay, so what we would normally do at this point is ask our guests to psychoanalyze themselves based on the song selections that they have provided to us. But we are going to let you off easy, and we're going to only make you say what two of your songs say about you. Are you ready?
It should be easy because my father's actually a psychoanalyst.
Look at this.
Uh-oh.
This is good.
Children of therapists always have very interesting insight.
It can actually make it harder.
I'm both nervous and excited for you. All right, so we'll start
You're
off.
Not alone.
Well, this is, I say this all the time. It's always exciting for me when the guest has a couple songs that I've never heard before and then a couple songs that are already on my iPod. And you went 2 for 2. So 2 songs I didn't have and 2 songs
mix.
I did have. So I have a ton of George Michael. I can honestly say until tonight, I have never heard the song Amazing.
But it's a new song.
Oh, then I feel better.
Right.
All right, so why George Michael's Amazing? From the entire George Michael catalog, why that song?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, it's a word. Is that a good answer?
Is that the idea?
That's good.
No, the honest truth is I had to call my best friend Peter to decide what my 4 favorite songs were because he really... kind of tells me what I like and what I don't like, and I like it that way. This is a song that I think came into my life when I had met someone who I thought was amazing, and it had a really catchy tune, and I had that sort of... but I'm supposed to be not just saying why I like the song, but what it says about me.
What it says about you. Although, no, we like this story.
Yeah, there's a backstory. We're happy.
We were not going to stop you.
No, I think what it says is that I appreciate amazing people.
All right, that was good. All right, well, we're going to only make you do one more. Now, as any of our listeners know, I am quasi-obsessed with the Indigo Girls. I adore the Indigo Girls. You chose one of my favorite Indigo Girls songs of all time. What does Dr. Nathaniel Frank think that Ghost, or what Peter says, that Ghost says about you?
Well, it's funny. I find it funny that you chose the 2 queer songs, because I chose 2 queer songs and then 2 non-queer songs.
Oh, we might go into those,
too. Well, if you want.
I'm in love with your ghost. Those are the lyrics, right?
Yes.
I'm so clueless about the songs that I like. I mean, I let it all sort of bubble at an unconscious level.
That's good.
Because I don't really know what the song says.
Maybe you should put your friend through to us and he can tell
can
us.
Can you have Peter call us? Peter?
Yeah.
He's on his way to Eastern Europe.
All right.
I think that that was just a nostalgia song from when I was in college driving around in Peter's dad's Acura on Lakeshore Drive. And it's just a lyric wonder, that song. And it made me feel, since I'm supposed to be analyzing myself, like I was back at college. And who doesn't like to feel like they're back at college?
I hey, yeah. Those were good times. All right, well, now I'm going to make you do one more, but I'm going to let you choose, because I covered the two queer songs, and we do have to highlight that we had two not-as-queer songs. You had Jeff Buckley's Last Goodbye, which we just listened to, and the song that's going to play out at the way end of our show, another one of my favorites, U2's Where the Streets Have No Name. We'll let you pick just one of them.
But didn't you say I only had to do two and this is three?
I know, but then you made a comment about how I only chose the queer songs, and then I don't want people psychoanalyzing me, so now you have to do another song.
Right.
We're doing the same thing with gay rights. We just want to end hate crimes. And maybe a little bit of marriage and,
exactly.
And you know, that Don't Ask, Don't Tell thing.
We are tricky.
We will let you choose one more, and then we release you to your research.
The Last Goodbye is clearly about my death anxiety.
Okay. Ooh. All right. See, I don't know Jeff Buckley that well.
Well, you're not going to, because he's not around.
That's Rebecca looked that up during the break.
I looked it up, 1997.
Right, but I do have a signed copy of that CD.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
To me, and it's a great album.
Well, they were four fantastic song selections. We've been having the instant messages pouring in all during the show, saying how much people enjoy the songs for tonight. Dr. Nathaniel Frank, author, historian, where should people go next to learn more about what you are working on?
Well, they can always go to palmcenter.org, because, I think I blended my words, to palmcenter.org, because mm-hmm. I will hopefully be there for a while, and unfriendlyfire.org, which is the website for my book, and that will stay live until I do another book, and
fantastic.
I do blog on it. So either of those sites, they can keep abreast of my goings-on.
Well, we are so appreciative on behalf of everybody, all of our listeners, and everybody who cares about this issue, and the people who should care about this issue and don't know that they already do.
And we will be following you and your work.
Absolutely. We're so appreciative of the amount of work you put into this to make the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell a priority, to put these stories, I mean, you really give them a human side, and I think that that is so important in this community when we're raising some of these issues, because they ultimately are human issues. So we are so appreciative of the work you're putting into this, and we wish you all the best, and thank you enormously for calling in.
Well, that was a very long thank you, and I'm very grateful for your kind words and for having me on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. You're welcome back anytime.
Great.
All the best.
Thanks. We'll be right back.
Indigo Girls singing Ghost, one of my favorite songs of all time, as requested by tonight's fantastic guest, Dr. Nathaniel Frank. Two quick stories before we bid you adieu until next week. In the continuing saga of how the New York legislature conducts itself, we must highlight today's story. Yes. The New York Senate has adjourned for the day, still without a vote on a pending marriage equality bill. Governor David Patterson, I'm reading from a story, obviously, Governor David Patterson demanded that the Senate meet in an emergency session to address several unresolved bills following weeks of deadlock over a leadership struggle. Yesterday, the first day of the special session, Senate Republicans attempted to preempt the Democrats' arrival at 3 p.m. to position themselves at the podium. However, Democrats, Becca, entered the Senate chamber at 12:30 and reportedly locked the door. After Tuesday's antics, it was unknown whether the full Senate would vote on anything, let alone marriage equality. According to the New York Daily News, the Republicans did not show up to Wednesday's session, prompting the Democrats to leave after gaveling it. It's just funny. What are you doing there, folks? What is it you're doing? You are looking so foolish and so stupid. It is one of the largest states in the country in terms of population diversity. You're idiots. I'm sorry, you're idiots.
If anyone knows... like one of the students who works there, like yes. as a volunteer, as an
you
intern.
Are an intern.
If you're like one of those high school students or middle school students who work there,
we want to.
I want to
from
interview you and
we
see how you feel about
any
this.
Guest on this show to talk to you because
absolutely
we are curious about what's going on. And then in another very funny story, well, kind of funny, a Connecticut church has created a stir. Some people have seen the video. It was taken off YouTube, but it's been copied onto other people's sites.
Oh, the exorcism.
Site. It's hilarious. People are up in arms. I think it's funny.
Watch out, because someone's going to get up here with a fire hose full of holy water at us.
Sometimes it feels like it anyway. My God, it could stop raining.
Oh, the burning.
Yeah, exactly. The video shows a 16-year-old boy lying on the floor, his body convulsing, as elders of a small Connecticut church cast a homosexual demon from his body. In the video, a woman is yelling, Rip it from his throat. Come on, you homosexual demon. You homosexual spirit. We call you out right now. Loose your grip, Lucifer. Go watch the video. It's funny.
It's funny, but it's not funny.
Oh, give me a break.
It's not funny.
If someone's thinking, oh, gosh, that commercial just swayed me, and get the lesbian Becca to an exorcism because of that commercial, if that really pushes someone over the edge, we have such bigger problems.
But that would be really traumatizing.
That would be no, I don't want the homosexual demon to be purged from my body. I do not want Lucifer to loosen his grip. There are so many ways to get... I just feel it's funny to end. Yes, comments, questions? Over there from the other side of the
great
table.
Great audio clips from Ken. Anyone who can edit that down for me?
Can you mix it and add a techno beat, something about I do not want the homosexual demon? Psh, psh, psh. Just something with a good, solid beat.
I think there might be a gas leak in the studio. We're getting weirder and weirder. Okay, let's bring it back.
Bringing it back before we depart you
for
the
week. Were there any good comments out there on the internet this
any
time?
Any good comments?
No, you know, really ridiculous.
Oh, no. Well, it was about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and just saying that we're going to lose in Iraq if the gays... are allowed to serve. I mean, it was just silliness.
No good ones.
No, there weren't really any good ones.
Because sometimes you just see those comments on these news stories and they're...
Well, no. Yeah. Oh, I will say, I didn't type any of them up or cut and paste them, but in the 20-something comments that they displayed just on the page where it was the article about Perez Hilton, 20 out of 20 of them were all Perez bashing. From the gay community saying, you don't represent us, even though you said you did at one point, and you need to just shut up. They were calling him Black Eyed Perez, which I thought was really kind of funny because it's Black Eyed Peas. So, and nor do we for a second think that anybody should be resorting to physical violence. I think one of the things that we want to highlight is that using the word faggot actually is violence. It is violence. And so much of the research, there's a great book out there called Dude, You're a Fag. And I don't remember the subtitle, but it's about explorations of masculinity. And people should go and check out that book because it really is one of the most violent words that's out there. So those were some of the good comments. But we will not be having Perez Hilton on the show. He is not coming up. But coming up next week, we have comedian Paul Case. We have Brian Batt from the Emmy Award-winning show Mad Men. We have Tyler Engel is the week after that, a soloist with the New York City Ballet. In short, we have a ton of guests coming up. There's a Pride Dance this weekend in Brattleboro, right?
Absolutely.
On the 26th.
And there's also a WVEW fundraiser. I don't know what we're going to do, Ken.
We're just going to have to make the rounds. We're going to have to
make the rounds. I don't want to be away from you.
I know.
I don't want to go brave these events all by my lonesome.
We will stick together and make our rounds of these events. And we will have a huge announcement in the next couple weeks about an enormous fundraiser.
An upcoming fundraiser
that we will be putting on in October. This show is so gay that all of you who listen can get involved with. So a big fundraiser to benefit HIV and AIDS related charities. We can't tell you about it yet because there's some details that need to be worked out. But suffice to say, we are most, most excited.
I think we're going to offer something special, and I'm not sure what yet, to any of our listeners who travel more than 100 miles to come to this event. Anyone who travels more than 100 miles will get some great prize.
You get to sit in the front.
Yeah.
You get to sit in front. But we don't want to give away
too
much.
And buy me a drink.
So, and apparently buy Becca a drink, which is a prize.
Nah, it's a prize. Yeah.
It's a prize.
Come on now.
So more on that in the next couple of weeks. There are tons of ways to get in touch with us. Please go and check out thisshowissogay.com. Please join our Facebook group, the ever-increasing Facebook community.
The Facebook.
And that's pretty much it. Drop us an email. God, we got a lot of emails this week over at thisshowissogay@AOL.com. We respond to each and every one of them. We love hearing from you. We love, love, love hearing from you.
And I love talking to you guys on the buddy list on AIM.
So, good times.
It's good stuff.
We love our show. We love our listeners. We bid you adieu. Get out there. Do some stuff. Remember, folks, why be gay when you can be so gay?
touch the flame. Well, the sheets have no.